Coming to you from the ancestral territory of the Anishinaabe and the area inhabited by the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation, this is Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and the natural world around us, seeking solutions, reporting on news and events, presenting positive alternatives, and highlighting the steps others are taking. We hope to inspire you to join the many others who are working to preserve and protect a healthy planet. I'm speaking with Ryan Sklar, research analyst with World Resources Institute. Welcome to Earth Matters, Ryan. Tell us what you've been working on lately.
Hi, Lawson. Thank you for having me. So we're working here at the World Resources Institute on our electric vehicle team on a wide range of different electric vehicle policies and technical assistance to cities around the world, with the overall goal of essentially trying to get electric vehicles to replace conventional vehicles as fast but also as responsibly as possible. So we dabble in a lot of different approaches and with a lot of different modes. We have a lot of work that we're doing that centers upon electric buses, and we've been strong on our electric bus technical assistance, especially in Latin America and in some parts of India and in Asia. We also have work that we do primarily with national government agencies, trying to help them shape policies and kind of financing mechanisms which might help electric vehicles take place and really kind of rise in prevalence around the world.
Right. Now, the reason I'm talking to you is because recently WRI and the Ross Center for Sustainable Cities issued two reports, one called Barriers to Adopting Electric Buses and the other one on How to Enable Electric Bus Adoption. Let's dive into those two reports. What prompted them and what support did you have to bring those reports to light?
Sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, we just recently published those two reports. And basically the methodology we had behind those reports was to say, hey, electric buses are really important and they're a really critical tool for helping us combat climate change and help clean up cities. The kind of thoughts around that was that the transportation sector in general counts for about 8 billion tons of annual greenhouse gas emissions. And the transportation sector kind of accounts for roughly one quarter of all greenhouse gas emissions worldwide, and it's also the fastest growing source of carbon dioxide and fossil fuel demand worldwide. And so that's why we're interested in general at vehicles. But what really is fascinating to us about buses specifically is that buses can oftentimes account for a disproportionate number of externalities, especially in cities in the global south. So by way of example, in Bogota, Colombia, for example, recently, their bus fleet represented less than 5% of the total vehicles in the city, but was responsible for 23% of the carbon dioxide, over half of the particulate matter, and almost about half of the nitrogen oxide that was produced by vehicles in the city. So it was really just a disproportionate amount of negative externalities and emissions coming from their transit fleet. Similarly, in Shenzhen, before they electrified their fleet, buses comprised about 0.5% of the vehicles in the city, but they were responsible for almost a quarter of the city's transportation-associated energy consumption and about 20% of the CO2 emissions. So electric buses are kind of this low-lying fruit because they have disproportionate emissions, at least in many cities, and they have an ownership structure in which they have large fleets which are subject to governmental control. So it's easy to go in and have kind of targeted changes, which you can't really necessarily have with vehicles that are not owned in the same types of fleet schematics, because you can basically just go in and talk to the government and make a big change. So the reports that we produced were based on 16 deep dive case studies from around the world. We really wanted to look at what was going on in cities that were experiencing kind of a wide spectrum of levels of success and implementation in different parts of the world. So we looked at some cities such as Shenzhen, China, which have essentially electrified their entire fleet. And we also looked at other cities which have really done nothing at all, except for maybe had some high-level discussions with a few interested stakeholders. So out of all of those case studies, we kind of developed a methodology for determining what some of the major barriers are to adopting electric buses throughout the world. And then also in the kind of second parallel report, we discussed some of the ways that you can actually enable electric buses to take place, especially in cities which are struggling right now.
So let's look at one of the reports, barriers to adopting. And in the report, they mentioned six different barriers. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what those six barriers are?
Sure. Yes. So, you know, I guess maybe I'll, instead of going through every specific barrier, you know, we have the six major barriers we go through, and then those are divided into about 15 to 20 smaller barriers. But I guess if I could just go over some of the more interesting and perhaps surprising findings, I'd say that, you know, very simply put, there are technical issues, there are financial issues, and then there are kind of institutional issues which have to do with scaling programs. From a technical perspective, you know, electric buses are a new technology, and they're still in their very nascent stages. And as a result, they still have some very real power limitations. So, for example, when Shenzhen was in the early stages of implementing their electric buses in 2011, they actually needed two electric buses to replace every diesel bus. Now, they've gotten that number basically back to a one-to-one ratio since they've scaled up, and there's been some technological advancements to their fleet. But nevertheless, there was this really big learning curve that had to do with figuring out how to operationally accept the technical limitations which come with electric buses. This was seen in other cities as well. Bogota mentioned to us that you know, their average electric bus was only really able to travel about 235 kilometers per day, while a diesel bus averaged over 400 kilometers per day. There's also issues with topography. So, you know, maybe your bus has a range which is appropriate for your route that you put it on. But if you put it over a route that has a lot of hills, that can you know, slow it down quite a bit. And actually in Campinas, Brazil, we were finding that the topography on some of the routes actually was causing delays in their schedule just because it took so long for the buses to overcome those power issues. These are also new technologies, and so since they're still in kind of their early design stages, there's some actual flaws that aren't necessarily related to the electric propulsion system, but are more basic, having to do with the actual you know, frames that are put on into place on the buses, and those need to be a little stronger because of the way that kind of the batteries are placed, and those weren't necessarily actually stronger when these buses were first implemented. And as a result, there's been some suspension issues with pneumatic tubes cracking, and kind of just general design flaws, which usually are associated with a new technology, which is on its way into mass production, but it hasn't quite got there yet. There's also a lot of really big financial issues. So these are buses which have an unwritten future because nobody really has taken a bus to the end of his expected lifetime, which is about 10 to 15 years. So as a result, you kind of need some risk-tolerant investment, given that there are a lot of unknowns about electric buses and exactly how they will perform into the future, what's going to happen with their battery over the next 5 to 10 years, and what exactly will be the resale value that you'll be able to get out of these buses once they do reach the end of their life. Those are all a lot of unknowns, and anytime you have unknowns, you also have risk, and that means that people are less happy to finance something. There's also a big change that needs to take place with transit agencies around the world in the way that they actually procure buses, because the average bus procurement model really is trying to minimize at all, or at least to a large, very, very large extent, the amount of upfront capital cost which is associated with buying a bus. But we're finding that electric buses cost upwards of two times more than a conventional bus, depending on where you are in the world. And they might have a lot of kind of significant savings over the duration of their life because the total cost of ownership might be a lot lower because the operational expenses of actually running one of these buses is quite a bit lower than a diesel bus. But nevertheless, a lot of the procurement models don't focus on total cost of ownership. They focus on just the upfront capital cost. And so there's this need to change the rigidity of a lot of the procurement models, which are used right now by transit agencies. And I'd say that the third big issue is the institutional ability to scale these electric bus programs. So it's one thing to have 15 to 20 electric buses that you implement in your city, and that's certainly a good start. But it's one thing, it's another thing in itself, and a very large and different challenge to actually take those buses and scale them up to represent a large proportion of your fleet. So there's needs to scale the financing mechanisms. Oftentimes you'll be able to find a bank or a financial institution that is okay, perhaps financing 10, 15 buses, but if you ask them to actually, you know, finance the entire Rolodex of your fleet, you're talking about thousands of buses, they are much less happy to do that. There are charging infrastructure issues as well, similar to the financing issues. Charging infrastructure costs a lot of money, and it also takes up a lot of space. So we were finding that simply just a lack of land is a big problem for institutions around the world who want to scale up their electric bus programs. Planners in Cape Town were even estimating that, hey, if we were actually to scale up in mass, we were going to need about 30 to 40% more space in our depots to accommodate the new e-buses. Some cities were saying, not only do we need more space, but we need more ways to accommodate the way that we actually look at the depot land we have. For example, some people are renting depot land, and the transit agencies which are renting depot land might not have the institutional ability to retrofit that land with charging infrastructure. There are some more bureaucracy involved with actually dealing with the landlords. And so there's a lot of institutional issues which have generally just made it very hard to scale electric buses.
Thank you for putting a damper on everything and letting us know what the barriers are. Obviously, what are the advantages of having electrification in your fleet?
Well, so I think the obvious advantages obviously stem from a lot of the emissions benefits which come from these buses. So, these are buses which are able to dramatically improve the local pollutants in your city. As we were just discussing, sometimes these buses can be upwards of half of many of the major local pollutants which you see in the major corridors and cities. And of course, there are obvious carbon emissions reductions advantages, and more generally just greenhouse gas emission reductions. So there's a lot of really important emissions benefits that's come out of these buses. More generally, though, these are also perhaps could be seen as a tool for improving your system in general. So when you have electric buses which are plowing the streets, they often generate good publicity. They are seen as a tool of a transit agency actually taking some very concrete steps to try to curb their greenhouse gas emissions, but also to improve the comfort and perhaps reliability in the long term of their fleets as well, because these buses require a lot less maintenance. The average diesel bus has about 2,000 moving parts. The average electric bus has just, a few dozen, if that, because the electric propulsion system at the end of the day is much simpler to maintain in many regards than a conventional diesel bus engine is. So there are a lot of operational savings. There are obvious emission savings, and there are some kind of positive externalities which relate to having new and shiny buses, which a city official or transit agency could kind of use to tout their environmental accolades.
Right, especially when a number of cities are proclaiming a climate emergency. Give us an idea of what is the adoption rate and where is it? Your reports talk about worldwide reports, so give us an idea of the adoption rate and where the focus of electric buses is.
Right, so simply put, China is running the show when it comes to electric buses. Over 99% of all electric buses that are driving around right now are in China. So that's not to say that the conversation ends at kind of the border of China, but it is very important to note, first and foremost, that China is definitely in the driver's seat when it comes to implementing electric buses. And when we talk about manufacturers of these buses worldwide, it probably comes as no surprise that the three major manufacturers are all Chinese companies. And Chinese manufacturers, particularly there's a few that come to mind, Yutong, BYD, and Zongtong, are approaching 100,000 buses each. And if you compare that to other manufacturers throughout different parts of the world, such as Solaris or Proterra and New Flyer, some of the major names in North America and Europe, you know, they're looking more at counts which are measured in the hundreds of electric buses. So, you know, it's very much skewed towards China at the moment. Although there's a lot of really exciting movement taking place right now all throughout the world. And so this kind of skew towards China definitely is starting to chip away. We've noticed a lot of really exciting pilot projects which have demonstrated the ability to scale up quite well in different parts of Latin America. So, for example, Santiago has been very proactive with their electric bus implementation program, and they started with just a few buses about 18 months ago, and now they have about 200, and they're well on track to have in the 500 to 600 range in the very short-term future. Bogota as well started with basically just one electric bus, and now has recently implemented a tender for 594 buses to be electrified in the next 12 months. So there's a lot of call for action, which is actually taking place in Latin America. There's also a lot of call for action, which hasn't necessarily led to the implementation of electric buses on the ground yet, but likely will in the next 5 to 10 years. So there's been a lot of declarations coming out of different states in the United States, as well as from the government of India and lots of places in Europe that are essentially saying we need all of our buses to be electrified by XYZ date. And so I think we can look forward to probably in the next 5 to 10 years having a very large upswell in electric buses throughout the world.
There's two parts to that. One is, as you say, the sort of line in the sand saying we're going to have our X percent or all of our buses electric by such and such date. And one that comes to mind is in the province of British Columbia in Canada. They're going to convert their 1,200 buses to electric by, I think it's 2040. But also the bus manufacturers are starting to locate some of their plants in North America to drive some of that adoption. Do you see that as a positive thing? Is that are people feeling good about those kinds of things?
Sure. Well, so us at World Resources Institute, you know, our perspective and role here is certainly not to try to support particular manufacturers at the expense of others and whatnot. But in general, I think, yeah, it's very positive that there is more market diversity when it comes to the number of manufacturers and the ability of manufacturers to produce electric buses. So I know there's been concerns in many parts of the world. I'm not particularly familiar with the specifics of the Canadian market, but certainly in Latin America and in Asia, there have been some concerns that there's basically one or two big names in town, and you know, there's lack of diversity and options when it comes to who you might go to for your electric bus manufacturing. So I think there's naturally going to be some growing pains, and you know, I've looked at some lists of that include, you know, 150 different manufacturers which claim to make electric buses, but when you actually do a little more research, you realize that the vast majority of those have maybe made one prototype and really aren't a commercially viable option for providing buses, and I think that's a kind of a natural issue which happens at any time you have a new technology emerging. But nevertheless, I think it's good to see that there should be some healthy competition throughout the world with many different manufacturers and hopefully with models which improve in terms of range and quality.
To quote one of your reports, there's the statement, electric bus adoption projects should be planned and carried out in a thoughtful way. There should be five steps that you suggest. One, consider the existing policy landscape. Two, conduct an initial analysis to understand costs and benefits. Plan and launch structured pilot project. Collect local data and set actionable and time-bound targets. Is that being done by various different cities around the world? Are they following that kind of step-by-step process?
Well, I think the answer, unfortunately, for the most part, is no. But there is room for some optimism here because it does seem that as we progress into the future and some of these kind of mass adoption planning tools become better known and more accessible because there's more information and data available to look at from worldwide examples, increasingly, there are cities that are able to plan a little bit more prudently for their electric bus adoptions. But there are plenty of cities around the world that are simply just saying, you know, we need electric buses. We don't really know what we're going to do. So let's start with a 5 to 10 bus pilot. Oftentimes, maybe the concept of the pilot is brought to a city from the behalf of a manufacturer who wants to perhaps promote their bus. And so there are plenty of examples of cities around the world that are basically implementing pilot programs, which likely will be hard to scale and mass adopt e-buses through. But there are other cities throughout the world that are taking a much more methodical approach and looking at some of the ways that actually planning can help ensure that a small e-bus fleet of today will actually turn into a large e-bus fleet of tomorrow.
And I want to put out a bit of a call to action to any transit activists that are out there and listening. You've also got a chart, key actions for city stakeholders at different development stages, and there are five different stages. And the first is understanding local needs and conducting a feasibility analysis, and that's where the public can sort of get involved at the very beginning stages and even just create the awareness that this is an option, whereas the standard is, well, we'll just keep buying the same buses that we've always bought, and you know, we know what they're like, they're reliable, we know the lifespan. So how can listeners and transit advocates get involved at the early stage, and what can they do to make sure the city councils push it all the way through to conclusion?
Yeah, so we found in a lot of our research, looking at a lot of different cities that we work with, that public engagement and public involvement are very critical steps in actually getting electric buses to the forefront and into the spotlight for local politics. You know, we had a situation in Bogota about a year ago where there was an opportunity for a new bus tender, and originally that tender did not have any wording that was incentivizing electric buses at all. But as a result of public backlash, there was kind of this tussle and the wording of the tender went back and forth and ultimately led to a very large electric bus adoption tender, which was published this year. So we found that public engagement and, you know, literally just going on social media, talking on Facebook or Twitter or have you with about the need for, you know, cities to take the lead on adopting electric buses can actually be very strategic and very helpful when it comes to convincing cities to take the initiative. We found that a lot of public policy, not just for electric buses, but in general, has a lot to do with public pressure. So, you know, people at the end of the day really have a very large role in what policymakers at transit agencies decide they want to prioritize. And so, you know, taking action in the forms of public outreach, showing up to meetings to discuss tenders for buses, and, you know, simply just raising your voice when you think something is happening, which perhaps is not going in the right direction, can make a very large impact.
And from your point of view, and having done these two reports, give us a glimmer of hope that the tide is turning and electric buses are the wave of the future.
So I think that out of all the policymakers and transit agencies that we've talked to, essentially everybody has agreed that electric buses are the right way forward. Now, of course, the only issue right now is that they're not the easiest way forward, and so that's why there's been some struggles to get these adopted. But nevertheless, I think we see a general consensus amongst policymakers and decision makers and transit officials that electric buses are going to be needed for a variety of reasons. And so, you know, let's try to get them in the ground and ready to go sooner rather than later. So there's been a large upswell in the adoption of electric buses over the last 5 to 10 years. In fact, from 2011 until 2017, we saw about an 80-fold increase in the amount of electric buses. Now, of course, those numbers are still quite low compared to the bus vehicle fleet in general, but there nevertheless is kind of an exponential curve which is forming, and I think we're just approaching kind of the hockey stick moment in that curve. So there's a lot of really interesting activism which is taking place and which is recognized as necessary by a lot of transit agencies in positions of power all over the world. Of course, we're going to have some bellwethers, and we're going to have other people who decide, you know, we're going to not take any risk, and we're not going to do anything that is innovative, and we're just going to kind of keep our diesel buses as long as we can. But I think that as more people switch over to electric buses, it's going to be inevitable, even for people that are kind of laggards, that electric buses are the future. And I think everybody does know that.
Ryan, tell us how people can find out more about World Resources Institute and specifically the two reports that I've been talking about.
Sure. Yes. So the World Resources Institute is an international NGO which works on a wide range of topics. And we have obviously a network presence, and you can find us online by just Googling World Resources Institute, or by Googling our acronym, our initials, WRI. But, you know, we work on a wide range of topics which vary from forest preservation to water security to ocean sustainability. And obviously, we do a lot of work as well on transportation. But everything that we do is related in some way to combating climate change and promoting sustainability. So, you know, at our core, we're a research organization and a think tank. We conduct independent research, and then we take that research and use it to advocate for particular policies. We're also, as much as I hate this term, I think it does apply to say we're a do tank, which is to say we don't just stop with creating the report. We actually take our ideas and put them into practice through technical assistance with cities and governments, through workshops with officials, and we produce planning tools that we can actually give to decision makers for them to make decisions, as well as publishing guidebooks, such as the Enablers report that we just produced for electric buses, that provide kind of step-by-step instructions on how to enact some sort of change, in this case, obviously, how to enact electric buses in cities. So I think I would encourage people to look at some of our publications in writing and some of our work throughout the world. We specifically focus a lot on what is dubbed kind of the global south, which is to say the developing nations and emerging economies in the world. And simply put, the reason we do that is that we think there's a lot of really good environmental work that takes place in the United States, Europe, and other parts of the Western world. But the global south is an area which maybe doesn't necessarily get as much attention, despite the fact that most of the world's largest population centers are located in the global south. And it's also the location of most of the fastest growing economies in the world. So that's kind of our mantra here at WRI. And yeah, I'd encourage everybody to take a look at some of our work and kind of use it to help promote sustainability throughout the world.
Ryan Sklar, research analyst with World Resources Institute. Thank you very much for joining us on Earth Matters.
Thank you so much, Lawson. It's been a pleasure.
Lawson Hunter here, host and producer of Earth Matters. I wanted to thank all the listeners of Earth Matters for your continuing support. As always, please feel free to send us your comments, suggestions, and thoughts on topics and people we should look at for future programs. Email us at earthmatters@newsandcomment.com. News and comment.com.